everyone. A very warm welcome to another exciting episode of Psychology Talks. And in today's episode, we're going to discuss about the servant leadership. And I like this style of leadership a lot because this is the kind of leadership which creates like the excellent impact, the long-lasting impact. And this is the style when you think more about how to serve people, how to help them more than anything, more beyond yourself. Like when leader intends to serve their team, they think beyond their self-interest. And that is what, and that is how they actually create impact that leaves a legacy. And this exactly, we're going to talk about that. What are the ways you can actually adopt this leadership style, how it can help your organization to grow, and what are the misconceptions or what are the things that are related to it which are not true, and which are the myths that we need to burst and to find out what exactly is servant leadership. And that's why I have invited one of the esteemed guests, and I'm so privileged to have him today. His name is Robert Seeger. He's a true visionary in this field of true servant leadership. He has been leading technology in one of the organizations, and he has a wealth of experience as a CIO, as ERP, cloud system expert, team builder, and he's been like doing a lot of innovation, bringing a change in his company. So he has earned a reputation of turning an ordinary team into high performers through the power of leadership, through the power of his servant leadership. And throughout his career, Robert has demonstrated a remarkable ability to lead with empathy, inspire innovation, and drive meaningful change within organization. So without further ado, let's welcome Robert Seeger.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Brian. It's so nice to see you again. I always enjoy our conversations.
Likewise.
I appreciate the very kind and verbose welcome as well, too.
It is very big, actually, very short because I want you to actually take us through your life journey, because I know that you have been in the field of like technology and you've been leading lots of teams through the style of servant leadership. Whereas I know the fact that you have been suffering from like incurable disease, which is MS, and it takes a toll on you, of course, because it's not easy to actually deal with this kind of illness and still think or still put your people first. So it is your greatness to, you know, serve your team. And I think that's kind of the passion when everyone needs to actually, when they need to lead the team. So I would want you to actually enlighten our audience today about your life journey. What are your struggles and how do you deal with it? So they get to know more about you.
Of course. Thank you. I appreciate that. And it's very kind. Yeah. I think the best place to start is I've been very blessed in my career, right? Early on in my career, I mean, my education is not in technology, right? My education is English and literature. I was going to be the next great novelist. and excuse me, when I stutter sometimes, that's my MS talking. So I'll try to talk very purposely so that I can speak through that. Anyway, so early on, it was probably the late 80s. Amazon was just a marker drawing on a sheet in the back of Jeff Bezos's garage. And he was just selling books online at that point. A friend of mine was creating these custom reports for the financial services industry, and he wanted to build an ERP package. ERP is Enterprise Resource Planning, right? It's the back of an organization. And, you know, you can give him a can of Mountain Dew and turn on Star Trek and he can code to no end, but he didn't understand business process. And at the time I was in manufacturing and as a sales guy, basically. And so he asked me to help him architect the product from a business perspective. And that's kind of how I jumped into technology. He taught me a lot of what I needed to know. We built up this product, we sold it, and, you know, made some fantastic money on it. And from there, I went to other companies because I had internet experience that nobody else had at that point, right? Business and internet technology experience. And, you know, I worked for a couple of CIOs that are no longer around because they were my age back when I was young, but that were amazing mentors. And that really is what inspired me to be as much of a servant leader, much of a mentor as possible as I started to progress through my career, right? And start to build teams. So I always took that knowledge that I gained from these mentors, and it's always inspired me to be a mentor as well, too. Now, along the way, in 1998, I was diagnosed with MS, multiple sclerosis, right? And it impacts people many, many, many different ways. I mean, one person, a person in one of my support groups that I belong to, literally went blind while he was at a stoplight driving his car. For me, it impacts my ability to stand sometimes. My legs get really weak. My face is all numb. It impacts my speech, and it impacts my ability to hold things, right? And it kind of ebbs and flows, right? I have medication that has slowed the progress of it, but it's certainly, there's no cure for it. But again, I like to think that I'm blessed because even though I may drop something now and then, even though I may stutter or slur every now and then, or I'm feeling too weak to stand, I just have to sit in my chair all day long, I'm still able to walk. I'm still able to live and breathe within this world. So I feel very blessed on that. And I think that's important when you're leading others. That's how you lead by example, right? You work through whatever challenge you have to work through because you want to be there for them, right? You want to be there to help them through whatever it is that they're going through. And I think the one blessing that MS has brought to me is that it's helped me understood the challenges that all the teams that I've ever worked with, what they're going through as well too, right?
Yeah.
Too many leaders out there think within the four walls of their organization. And I'm telling you that you cannot think that way. You have to think outside of those four walls of that organization because that's where your team members come from. There's always going to be something happening in the background of their lives that's going to impact the way that they work for you, right? And until you build relationships with those team members and until you begin to understand and empathize with the problems that they're facing, with the challenges that they're facing, or even with the life challenges that they're facing, right? Only then can you help them excel in their career and excel for the team that you're trying to build. So that's the one thing that I take from my own personal struggle with MS.
Amazing. Your story, I mean, especially like the way you started, you said that you were there with the internet and then you actually, and it's amazing to know that you have your qualification in English literature. And I really like the fact that you mentioned you wanted to write a novel because that's one of my goals as well. When I started writing my first book, I actually wanted to write fiction. And then I decided, no, I think I should write nonfiction first, and then I will write a novel because writing a novel is definitely a different thing. But I really like to actually use the imagination in a different way. And it's much more fun, actually, instead of writing a nonfiction book, because nonfiction book is more like research and kind of a dry stuff. And like, whereas fiction, like, you know, you can like have your imagination go wild and you can do a lot of things. So yes, that's my goal as well. Someday I will write my novel as well.
Yeah, and I've been working on the same novel now for about 15 years. So
wow,
it's going to get there.
Quite similar, yeah. I spent 20 years to actually write my first book. I saw it on you when I was actually going through your profile that there's some kind of the episodes you have on Amazon, right? About
on Kindle. Oh. Yeah, you can actually buy chapters on Vella. I haven't finished it yet, but I thought, If I did that, that would incent me to keep working on it to finish it finally. I mean, I'm just about there. So
I think you should do that and work on that. And I actually, one of my mentor, I'm sure you know, Roger Brooks, and he was also working on the novel. And I told him as well when I was working with him that I want to write a novel as well, and I will write it. I have kind of a story, but it's still not the way it should be. So anyway, I'm working on it, let's say maybe next 20 years.
I mean, that's all you could do. I mean, you have to take advantage of the time that you get when the inspiration strikes you. I mean, if you want to become a, you know, everybody knows this. I mean, I've read, you know, I'm a voracious reader. I read your book and I love it. Changed my life. Read your son's book, which was amazing too for a young man. But in order to do anything like that, you have to really dedicate a lot of time to it. And for me, you know, I enjoy what I do. I enjoy the company I work for. I enjoy the team that I manage. And when I come home at night, I enjoy being with my family. So I suppose I could dedicate myself to 8 hours a day of writing, four or five hours a day of writing, but I just haven't yet because I have other priorities, you know? I'm thinking when I retire, that's probably when I'm going to.
As you said, when the inspiration strikes or when you just decide that you have to write down. And I tell you, just since although we are drifting from the subject, but I will just tell you that when I started writing my first book, I mean, because although I decided that I will write in 20 years or something, yet I was not able to write because, as you mentioned, that we need to actually dedicate some time and we need to spend some time on it and we need to break the normal routine to work on that. And then actually I read the novel of Paulo Coelho, The Zahir. And when I actually read that, that gave me inspiration. I said, okay, now I have to write it. And that moment, I think sometimes you need to wait for that moment to occur and then it will give you inspiration to whatever like you want to do in your life. It's not only linked with writing. It could be anything. Like if you want to start a business, if you want to do anything, that particular moment when the inspiration is strike, that is the moment that you decide that, yes, I want to do it. And then you go for it.
Yeah. And, you know, and that actually is to the point of our discussion here on servant leadership too, right? Part of building relationships with your team is understanding what some of those aspirations are for your team members, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm almost certain that anybody coming into a job, into an office, their aspiration is not just to go ahead and file paper every day, right? They want to do something else beyond that. They have other dreams. And unless as a leader, you don't take that opportunity to learn about what they want as far as their dreams are concerned, and you don't support them and you don't become actively engaged in helping them, they're not going to perform for you. Right? They're not going to perform for the organization. I have a particular person who works for me now that, you know, the family has a farm and they want to be able to spend time on that farm, nurturing that farm, building that farm up. Right. And certain times a year, she needs to be on the tractor. Right. Yeah. And, yeah. and I support her 100%. Gave her yeah. a little hotspot so that she can have Wi-Fi on the tractor so that we can still communicate. Yeah. Right. Cause she said yeah. it's so compelling. So it's things like that, you know, that I had another team member at a past position who was very interested in project management.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And wanted to eventually be a project management consultant. Right. Which means she would have left the organization. But I said, okay, if that's what you want, let's get you that. Let's tailor your role around project management and let's get you certified. And the organization paid for it, got her that way. And then 5 years later, she's on her own consultant now for project management.
Wow. I mean, wow.
And we shouldn't be afraid. And that I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
A lot of leaders hold too tightly onto their teams, right? Because yeah. they don't want to have to replace them.
Mm-hmm.
But I would argue that the more freedom that you give them, right? Mm-hmm. The more support that you give them outside of their roles,
yeah.
the more likely they're there to stay with you because they feel that connection. They feel that support. You know, they understand that you're giving to them so they can give back into the organization. And that I think that's where you get successful. You know, I have walked into so many teams over the course of my career where the previous person that was leading that team was that command and control.
Yeah.
Right. And that just creates a toxic culture.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you brought in such valid points here and you're so apt on saying that the leader should never be afraid of, you know, being replaced by the team members mm-hmm. because that means that shows their insecurities. And when actually, you know, when someone have the team member who are actually more or capable in from them, it is the time to actually create better bond and to have, like, you know, understanding where they can learn, like the leader can learn from them, and then mm-hmm. The leader can give them more freedom, as you mentioned, the freedom and the leader can empower them to perform on their own. And you brought, I mean, these are amazing insights that you brought in. And I feel that that is the main dilemma that is happening these days, which creates toxicity in the environment that leaders get afraid that,
right.
you know, they think that they can be, their role will be finished because the team members will take over their role. And never
Yeah. A very good friend of mine, another author, Colonel Alan Landry, wrote a book about mentorship and mentoring, right? Yeah. And he also created a workbook around it, around mentorship and mentoring. Actually, I had him on my own podcast that I do. And one of the things that he talks about, which I think is amazing, is that when you're mentoring, right, you are also being mentored. The mentor yeah. is being mentored, right?
Yeah.
Because there's always room to learn. And I what's important is that you're treating the person that you're mentoring as if they were your mentor as well too, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's a two-way street, so to speak, right? As much yeah. as you're giving to them, they want to give to you, and you have to be willing to receive that. In fact, you have mm-hmm. to encourage them to give that to you. You know, yeah. and you do that through positive reinforcement. You do that through speaking back what they've taught you, so they know that they're. Everybody likes to teach what they know.
Yeah, yeah.
And you should never be afraid of that. And I have always at every team that I've ever been at, you know, I take my time and I identify that one person that I think should take over for me.
Mm-hmm.
Could take my job, and I encourage them to. I think that's important. I mean, if I'm not creating the next person, the next Bob, so to speak, I'm not doing my job properly then. right? We shouldn't have to be pushing back or worrying about people that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? The thing is, the more like those insecure leaders, if they try to hold their position, it's somehow they're actually, that means they're creating the boundaries around themselves. That means that they will be stuck in the role and they won't be able to move forward. Because when we start training, for example, for the next anyone in line for us, that means that we are also planning for our future, because that means we know that we are not going to stay in this role forever. That means we need to think that we move forward. And the best way, I always say, the best way to actually grow is to actually by giving, by sharing. Mm-hmm. You share your knowledge, when you share your whatever you have, when you share your love, it increases manifold. And that's what happened. I think in servant leadership, also, it is true that the more you give, the actually more you get.
Yeah, yep. So,
That's the main philosophy. I feel that applies to servant leadership, and that is why it makes it more impactful, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things too that most servant leaders worry about are not just within their own teams, but within teams that they interact with as well too, yes. Right? So it's reaching through those doors, reaching across those boundaries. I've been in plenty of organizations where each department is isolated within itself, and each process, each person within that department are all kind of like huddled together with their own little shields up, because they don't want to get in trouble for this. They don't want to get in trouble for that. They don't want to cross boundaries here or there, where I'm kind of the exact opposite, right? I go into all the departments, right? I try to get to know everybody there and, you know, offer our help here. We're here to help you. We're here to support you. We're here to make your job better. What can I do for you? What can I do for you? Because I think that's what builds a better, more cohesive organization all told.
Yeah.
There's a great influencer on LinkedIn, Chad Gono. Highly recommend checking him out. He leads an organization. They're a plastics manufacturer. He leads an organization just that way. He and I engage all the time on the platform because we have a lot of the same philosophies, right? He's a CEO and an owner that anyone could approach at any time. And he's out there, and he amazingly, he does it. It's a large company. And I think he knows almost everyone by name.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Because he gets out there. He gets out there with them to talk to them. The company I'm with right now, it's only been a short time. I don't know everybody by name yet, but I'm getting close.
Oh, that's great. Okay. I want to actually ask basically in this that we hear a lot about the toxic leadership and something, but there are also some challenges in leading team. Like, you know, I understand that it is always the leaders who actually drive the culture. But what about the toxic employees as well, who don't want to give, and to actually, they always want to be pampered by the leader? Because I understand that as a leader, people are actually taught that they need to serve the team. But what about the team members, that if you're giving them, but you're not receiving back? So how to deal with those kind of things?
Yeah, that's always probably I would say throughout my career, that's always been my biggest challenge, especially when stepping into, like I have recently, into a more mature team, right? Where the members have been there for dozens of years, right? And their behavior and the way they do things has been tolerated for the same over those dozens of years. And now those expectations change because the leader changes and opens things up. And they have a hard time. So in the past, the way I've always done it is, you know, you can't expect to come in and change someone's course if they've been doing it this way for 25 years within the course of 90 days, whatever the case is, right?
Yeah.
So I think the way that I've done it in the past is through example, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, you don't really want to tell them, you know, just, this is what I command you to do. You don't want that. So you go out and you just do it for them. So for example, you know, someone from the VP of sales comes in and says, I can't use this whatever item that is. And the support person that's been there for so many years says, well, this is our process. This is what we do. Stick with it. You know, and that's where someone like me should step in and say, okay, what do you need? Well, you know, let's talk about that. And then let's get him what he needs. And the other person just sits back and looks, and they start realizing, hey, I can actually step out of my box to take that step forward. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's so as servant leaders, we have to go out there and we actually have to get out there and lead by example as well and do some of the things that we need to do as a way to illustrate a better way or the way it should be done.
And
but there will come a point though where, you know, a particular person may not change no matter how much you try to convince them, and no matter how much you try to get personal with them, no matter how much you try to take them by hand and, you know, get them involved and in teach and mentor and stuff like that, then you have to make that an unfortunate decision, I think, at that point. But I think until you've exhausted everything that you could possibly do to give that individual the opportunity to turn around, you know, you got to do everything you can.
Yeah, I think that's really true, and that we can do to a certain extent. But if the other person is not willing to change, you cannot change them by force. So
no,
that's very true. Yeah, very true. So we talk about like these kind of challenges that we can face, but there are misconceptions also link with the servant leadership, you know, that basically that it's not all like when you keep on giving. I mean, that's the philosophy that we get, that, you know, the more you give, the more you get, but it's not always work that way. And there's also misconception that, like, you know, you shouldn't give that much, in order, because in any case, the more you give, definitely it has like more spiritual benefit, but lot of like misconception attached to it. So how do you tackle those kind of things when people say that, you know, it wouldn't work, you need to stop doing this, isn't it? Because servant leadership is all about like helping people, thinking for them. But again, we need to, maybe you can say that there is one misconception that, you know, you should not do that. But there's also a reality that there is, like, you may also get exhausted, right? So you may need some boundaries as well. So how do you tackle those problems, especially when we talk about servant leadership?
Yeah, well, so boundaries are really important when you're talking about servant leadership, right? Because you can only, there's only so much that you can give. And at some point, you're either going to have to step away for a second, or you have to learn how to say no. I mean, there are things that you have to say no to, right? And that you can do in an empathetic, you can do in an open and almost, I hate to use the word cheerful because no is never cheerful, but you can do it in a cheerful manner, right?
Yeah.
And you can do it no with an explanation of, you know, no, and this is why, right?
Yeah.
I think where people get into the problem of saying no is because I said so. No, because I said so is not a reason. You give them the business justification or the personal justification, right? Of why you're saying no. Maybe the no is budgetary, right? Maybe the no is because we're going to take a different direction, and let's talk it out. Let's understand why that no is being said, or even that boundary, why that boundary is being put up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, a lot of servant leaders think that they have to be accessible 24/7.
Yeah.
You know, I am not, right? So when my day ends, I don't look at my email anymore. I don't answer messages unless it's an emergency text, which we have a code that we put in. We say, okay, if this is an emergency and I get that text, I'm going to answer it. But if I get a text from anything else, I'm not going to answer it until the next morning. So we set up boundaries for ourselves so that we can have lives. And by doing that, it makes our work lives that much more robust, because we know we need to make every second rich and important and valued.
And I think it creates more understanding also of the team, that, you know, what values, and it is also respecting each other, because, you know, it's not like, so if somebody's like willing to work for us, that doesn't mean that we have access to their lives 24/7. So I mean, basically realize this fact that they have other responsibilities, they have other life other than, you know, work as well. And when we create that kind of respect and understanding, I think our relationship, you know, gets more stronger and develops in a much meaningful way. So I think that helps in several ways. So
yep, absolutely. And yeah. I think it really is important, and it helps build the relationship.
Yeah.
Right. When we begin to understand each other's boundaries, when we begin to understand each other's feelings about what we're doing and how we do things, it just creates an awareness and an openness and a closeness that allows us to work together. And that's really where you get the high performance coming in, right? Because you have a team that's not only physically in sync, right? Not only mentally in sync, but emotionally in sync. Once you hit that, that's when things start to really kind of tick.
Yeah.
You know, and we begin to understand our cues. I have a couple of people where when I'm talking to them, I can see something going on. And, you know, I know to ask, are you okay? You know, I know what questions to bring out to help them out. And when they see that or when they feel that, it just makes them even more dedicated to what they have to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really love that when you said that if the team has to be emotionally in sync, because, you know, no matter what, like logically, rationally, people can understand that, you know, this is the way they're doing this, that is why they're doing the work, and they need to work because of their to survive in this world. But, you know, people feel more loyal when they are connected with others through emotions. So I think that's the key point when to develop more meaningful relationship through understanding, empathy, and like through emotions.
Yep.
So anyways, like I know we can go on and on this topic, but I'm afraid the time is running out. So before we actually close the show, what one advice would you like to give to our audience today to practice servant leadership?
Yeah, I think as long as you could put the needs of your teams and their personal needs and professional needs in front of your own, you're going to be successful, right? I think that's what's important. Everything that you should be doing as a servant leader should be about what's going to help your team members, because those are the guys and girls and men and women that are going to pull you across that goalpost, right? They're going to help you get everything done. So you've got to put their needs first above yours. And if you can remember that, I think that will definitely make you successful. And when you do that, you're going to get that emotional connection, right? Because you're going to start understanding what those needs are, because needs, you know, your needs fall on all kinds of different psychological levels, right? So when you connect from that level there, you're going to make it work.
Yeah, amazing advice. Yeah, definitely. Because mostly this servant leadership is all about definitely thinking beyond their self needs. However, like people do get selfish, you know, they think that and that's also it's perfectly fine because we are all human that sometimes we feel. But the thing is that when you are in a leadership role, you need to think beyond your self-interest, and that is the only only way one can create more impact, or the true impact that can leave a lasting impression on others and on in the society. So if anyone wants to reach out to you, what is the best way? What is the best medium? I know you're very active on LinkedIn. Any other way?
LinkedIn's good. LinkedIn's very good. Or you can hit me up on X at R. Seeger. All those good things, but LinkedIn is probably the best. I'm on there the most. I have a YouTube channel, and you know, I don't have a public Facebook. I have a private Facebook, so it's just to watch the grandkids. LinkedIn is the best. Yeah, I'm happy to speak to anyone, you know, and support anyone that I can. You know, because so many people support me. I mean, if you can't, my background's blurred, but I'm working from home today. because I've been struggling a little bit with my MS, and my team was very gracious about about me working from home. You know, they stay in contact with me. They check on me all the time. And, you know, we've built that relationship up with the team in just a few months.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. And that, if you have that kind of team who supports you at this time, you feel so appreciated and valued that you may not want to leave them. I mean, you know, you just want to work with them because you feel good. It's not for any other reason. And that is a wonderful feeling, I'm sure.
It is.
So thank you so much for joining us today, sharing those wonderful insights, sharing your journey. And I know despite all your struggles, you managed to, show up. You show up for others on LinkedIn and you do a lot of things to help others, which is amazing, knowing that you have your own struggles. So it's an honor to actually know you, to have your support, and thank you so much for joining.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, and it's been my honor as well. Your book is my favorite book, and
thank you so much. Thank you. Okay. I don't know why there's actually some the comments are not basically showing up. So maybe I'll just comment on all those people who have shared their comment on LinkedIn or on any other platform after the show. So thanks to all those who joined us live, and I'm going to get back to you after finishing this show. Thank you so much. Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.